absolutely unthinkable that anyone could suffer like this. And a million people are all penned in, they're suffering.
VOA visits Rohingya camps in Bangladesh. It's Monday, July 16th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, U.S.-China relations strain over Taiwan. China is apparently manufacturing with illegal chemicals. Pakistan is a soccer ball champion. Smart toilets and logging on to combat air pollution. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The plight of nearly 1 million Rohingya refugees continues in Bangladesh as monsoon rains are drenching camps and raising the possibility of widespread disease. VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren recently made her second visit to the Rohingya camps in 6 months to see if conditions are improving, as some reports have suggested.
You know, I've heard people say that it's gotten better. I didn't think it had gotten better, because you've had more people who have descended upon this area, run out of Myanmar by the Myanmar military, ethnic cleansing, and so it seems more crowded as they try to expand these camps.
And this is just the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I honestly don't know how these Rohingya are going to endure this day after day after day. Actually, it's hour after hour after hour. There's another crisis. This is just unthinkable. Absolutely unthinkable that anyone could suffer like this. And a million people are all penned in. They're suffering.
But what was even worse this time than when I was there 6 months ago is the monsoon season had set in. And you've got all these people, almost a million people, who descended upon this area fleeing for their lives, and they took down all the vegetation to build shelters and also to use as fuel to cook. So there's nothing, there are no trees or anything to hold the soil. And they came in, and in desperation, they built these shelters wherever they could first see them, and they built them on hillsides. Well, now comes the monsoon season. And the monsoon season, unless you've been in a monsoon, never seen anything like it. So now what's happening is these shelters are literally collapsing on the shelters beneath them. Then you've got the added problem that there were some latrines that were built on the hillside too. That likewise, those are now collapsing and they're draining, and the filthy water and the feces in the water is flowing down into the water system. And you know that that's a fertile breeding ground for disease. That's how cholera is transmitted, is in filthy water. Everyone seems somewhat jubilant by the fact that half the people in the camp, they've been able to vaccinate for cholera, but half is half a million people, and you've got another 480,000 people who haven't been. And as we got deeper into the camp, we were on a road that got washed away while we were inside the camp by the monsoon.
Let's take a look. I mean, it's unbelievable. This is what they're now going to drive across. Right here, take a look at this, and it's straight down, what, about 50 or 60 feet? Straight down.
While the roads are impassable and even dangerous, how do you get food in there? What if someone gets sick? And these people are living on top of each other. Well, the one thing that's the sort of redeeming quality about this is that, you know, just like we saw with the boys in the cave in Thailand, there are a lot of really good people out there in the world and from all over the world. And to deal with the health crisis, you've got a lot of NGOs that have come to Bangladesh to help out. So there's been an overpouring of help from the world, but you can't meet the magnitude of the challenge. That's the problem. So the good side is you see these incredible people working around the clock, 24/7. By the other hand, is that you look around and you see that there are almost a million people here, and it's just not being handled completely. There's not enough of a world spotlight on this crisis. The UN has called this ethnic cleansing. The United States has called this ethnic cleansing. So this is one of those instances where the world media can use its power and its influence by putting its spotlight on this crisis, which is, frankly, something that we all want to do as journalists, is put a spotlight on, hoping to lead towards solutions, or at least dialogue towards trying to find solutions.
There's a lot of great video with this. You can see Greta Van Susteren's video on our website at voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia stories that are currently trending on voanews.com. A report says U.S. and North Korea meet to discuss Korean War remains. Indonesian police shoot dead 3 suspected militants. U.S. Intel chief warns of devastating cyber threat to U.S. infrastructure. deepening military ties solidify China's ambitions in Africa. Pacquiao wins 60th career bout with 7th round knockout. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. China regards Taiwan as its own territory that may one day have to be conquered by force. China has also criticized the Trump administration's efforts to forge closer ties with the government of President Tsai Ing-wen. So the recent transiting through the Taiwan Strait of two U.S. Navy destroyers amid tensions over North Korea and trade created a sharp reaction from Beijing. While the U.S. Pacific Command called the transit routine, a Chinese foreign ministry spokeswoman said China expressed its concerns to the United States. William Sharp is a former scholar with the Institute on Taiwan History and hosts an online program called Asia in Review. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty Taiwan appears to hold greater strategic importance to the Trump administration.
The United States has, I think, reached a kind of a point, an understanding that it's ramping up its relationship with Taiwan. It sees increased importance in maintaining a close relationship with Taiwan. We opened the de facto embassy. We've authorized the sale of submarine technology to Taiwan, the Taiwan Travel Act, and other legislation that's recently been passed by Congress. And we're even talking about posting Marine Guards at the new embassy. I think what it shows here, this transit shows, is the United States has commitments to Taiwan, it has commitments to Asia, and it's carrying them out.
The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokeswoman said Monday that we must state the Taiwan issue is related to Chinese sovereignty and territorial integrity. We urge the U.S. at once to scrupulously abide by the One China principle and avoid harming China-U.S. relations and peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait.
The truth of the matter is the U.S. has always maintained that the ultimate, how should we say, solution, I'm not sure that's the best word, of Taiwan is to be worked out between players on both sides of the Taiwan Strait. But without undue pressure, undue interference, it has to be a very equitable playing field.
Yeah, the Global Times opined that the U.S. is sending China political signals by sending warships through the Taiwan Straits and apparently said the Democratic Progressive Party on Taiwan has been emboldened by Washington's gestures.
I think that goes without saying. I think the DPP wants a very close relationship with the United States, and it's probably quite some relief to see that those two ships, those two naval vessels, transited the Taiwan Strait. China has ramped up its military missions around Taiwan in recent months, intimidating Taiwan with flying bombers close by, using passages to that go around Taiwan to get to open seas. You know, the truth of the matter is that if the U.S. wants a really strong position in the West Pacific, if it seeks to maintain that, it needs a good relationship with Taiwan. If Taiwan should ever fall into the hands of the PRC, our position in the Western Pacific is non-existent.
The Global Times went on to say, in the future, Washington may send larger ships to the Taiwan Straits, but Washington will not succeed. The mainland's military strength has improved greatly since the 1996 crisis and is capable of countermeasures to deter Washington and the Taiwan administration from provocations.
You know, I'm not sure if it's really advisable for the U.S. to send an aircraft carrier down the Taiwan Strait. I mean, I think it gets a message across using two destroyers. While China has made great military advances, still I believe that the U.S. holds the military advantage.
In 1996, as Taiwan held its first direct presidential election, the mainland conducted naval exercises off the Taiwan coastline, causing panic and prompting the U.S. to deploy an aircraft carrier battle group to the region. Bill Sharp said, however, the more China rails against Taiwan, the greater the resolve of the Taiwan people to remain separate. Happening now in Asia, Indonesian anti-terrorism officers shot dead three suspected Islamic militants in the central Java city of Yogyakarta. Police say officers from an elite unit had shot the suspects after being attacked with sharp weapons and a firearm. Two officers suffered arm wounds. Police seized four machetes and a revolver. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're starting your week out with us here on VOA Asia. A newly released report from the non-governmental organization, the Environmental Investigation Agency, uncovers evidence of the illegal production and use of CFC-11 in the polyurethane foam industry in China. The report came in advance of a meeting of an open-ended group in Vienna, Austria, the Montreal Protocol meeting last week, where the issue of the rogue CFC-11 emissions were high on the agenda. VOA's Lori London asked Avipa Mahaparta, the climate change campaign lead with the Environmental Investigation Agency, how this was all uncovered.
I will maybe start with the May 2018 study published in Nature, where scientists found that surprisingly and inexplicably, they were seeing that CFC-11, which is a potent ozone-destroying gas and has been banned globally since 2010, was somehow showing up in the atmosphere in significantly higher quantities than expected. The scientists concluded that it must mean that there is some new illegal production of CFC-11 occurring somewhere, and they could narrow it down to East Asia without pinpointing a single country. And as Environmental Investigation Agency, we have been working in the Montreal Protocol, which is the international treaty that deals with refrigerants and that was created to deal with the ozone hole problem. And so we immediately started our investigations into what might be happening, what could explain this. And in a nutshell, what we found was shocking even to us, because we found evidence that of the 21 companies we reached out to and got a response from, 18 companies spread across 10 provinces in China openly claimed that they are using CFC-11 for building insulation purposes, mostly.
And this is an illegal substance?
That is correct. CFC-11, because it harms the ozone layer and it causes ozone depletion, its production and consumption, along with four other CFCs, was written right into the original text of the Montreal Protocol in 1987. So CFCs were officially banned in developed countries in 1996, and in developing countries by 2010. It's not supposed to be there.
Do you just do the investigations and then you turn it over to another body, or how does that work?
That is absolutely correct, yes. So EIA we are a non-governmental organization. We don't represent a company or a country, so we are an independent campaigning organization. We presented our findings to the government of China so they can take enforcement action, and we are also going to present our findings at the Montreal Protocol, which is the international treaty that all 197 parties of the world are signatory to, which is the environmental treaty and the body that deals with ozone-related issues and gases under it.
Similar to the Paris Climate Accord?
Somewhat similar, but even stronger than that, because under the Montreal Protocol, there are specific gases that the global community has agreed to ban, and there has been, over the many years, there are institutions and bodies that have implemented these bans. There is a financial mechanism that is associated with it. There's a non-compliance machinery that is also associated with the Montreal Protocol. Because this was developed back in the 80s, over the decades, all these institutions and mechanisms could be put in place, which the Paris Agreement is now starting to work on.
Mm-hmm. The violation, it's by China's foam industry, not China's government, correct?
That is correct. That is correct. However, there is what the Chinese government now has to figure out is every single country in the world has to report to the Montreal Protocol what is getting produced and what is getting consumed in their country. They're required to. And all parties to the Montreal Protocol have been reporting near zero new production and consumption since 2006, which is why when the scientists found this in the atmosphere, their immediate question was, well, if all the countries are reporting zero, where is this coming from? So what we are asking the Chinese government to do now is to ensure that, not only do they take action against these specific companies that we have identified and their networks, but also to conduct a comprehensive nationwide review of the sector and investigate beyond these identified factories to make sure that there are penalties for using and producing such banned substance that would deter offenses in future.
This I'm assuming is an environmental crime. How big of a deal is this?
This is a massive environmental crime. And if illegal CFC 11 use continues unabated in this sector, as we have identified, our calculations, you know, by 2022, for example, we are looking at as much as 700 million tons of carbon dioxide equivalent. So that on an average is equal to the carbon emissions from 16 coal-fired power plants every year.
Coming up, France is football's World Cup champion, but Pakistan is also claiming a title. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news from VOA Asia. Mosquitoes are one of the deadliest creatures on Earth. Scientists say the results of a pioneering tropical trial could help global efforts to eradicate the dangerous pest. In a town in northern Australia, the trial wiped out more than 80% of the mosquitoes there that spread dengue fever. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, many of you no doubt followed the World Cup, which has ended in Moscow with France defeating Croatia 4-2. While Pakistan is not a soccer powerhouse, there is a strong link between the country and the sport. A lot of the credit goes to the city of Sialkot, where about 40% of the world's soccer balls are produced. Many wonder how a small city in northeastern Pakistan can compete on the global stage in manufacturing high-quality soccer balls. VOA Salman Khan visited several factories there to learn more. Bejan Hamdard narrates.
Sialkot has become a hub for factories that make sports equipment. So much so that one company here has the sole rights to produce the official soccer balls for the 2018 FIFA World Cup.
During the World Cup, the demand increases from our regular customers and by association. We also get new customers as well.
And more orders mean factory workers are very busy.
Whenever World Cup comes around, we get a lot of work, more orders. We have to give more time. Salaries doubled. We get great wages.
We make around 40 million soccer balls in a year, but in a World Cup year, we easily reach approximately 60 million. Sialkot exports roughly $200 to $250 million in footballs alone during the World Cup.
So, not surprisingly, factory workers here feel a sense of pride as they watch the World Cup matches.
When the soccer ball made by us with our own hands is used in the World Cup matches, we get very happy.
With so many sports equipment factories in Sialkot, competition is fierce.
You have to work hard. You have to communicate with customers and negotiate prices, and only then can you win contracts.
Child labor has been linked to some of these factories in the past. But according to a local representative of the Independent Monitoring Association for Child Labor, or IMAC, companies are working diligently to please their clients and make sure their factories meet international standards.
Factories make the FIFA licensed balls, and many make quality balls, so it is very important for them to become IMAC members. Their clients no longer look just at factories' child labor rates. They also want to make sure they are socially responsible.
The global attention on the World Cup series has been a boon to Sialkot's sports equipment industry. Business is booming, unemployment is low, and people are moving here from other parts of the country to take advantage. Some say it's too bad that the World Cup happens only once every 4 years. For Salman Khan in Sialkot, Pakistan, this is Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
This news from VOA Asia, Philippine boxing legend Manny Pacquiao clinched his 60th victory with a seventh-round knockout in a World Boxing Association welterweight title fight. His victory could extend a boxing career that had taken a backseat to his political life as a Filipino senator. You're a winner every time you step into the VOA Asia Facebook ring. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, nanotechnology researchers at the University of Cambridge are developing an intelligent toilet that may change the nature of medicine. It automatically analyzes a user's urine to capture valuable medical data. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo analyzes the story.
At the Royal Society's Summer Science Exhibition in London, researchers explained the technology might help people self-diagnose conditions, alter medication levels, or perhaps even lower their insurance premiums.
What we want to see is detecting biomarkers directly in your urine to let to personalize the healthcare directly to your home.
The data can be collected far more frequently than occasional blood and urine samples taken by healthcare workers. The results could be automatically sent to a user's smartphone or to a healthcare professional.
Wouldn't be great if moms can detect if their sons are doing drugs or if your premium of the insurance company is lower just because you are giving them access to your everyday health data.
The toilet traps molecules between tiny nano balls of metal inside a small chamber. It's there that they are analyzed using a method called nanogap sensing.
It is just the concentration of molecules within, so the interaction of the molecules with tiny objects, so 2D materials, graphene or gold or silver nanoparticles. So it's when you have high electric fields next to the molecules that then you can enable the lighting up of the molecule.
She says they are still 10 to 20 years away from installing smart toilets in people's homes, but they are excited about the potential benefits such a technology will bring to society. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
The air pollution problem isn't going away, especially in much of Asia. According to the World Health Organization, 9 out of 10 people worldwide breathe polluted air, and approximately 7 million die as a result of exposure to it each year. VOA's Tina Trin reports one creative startup has an artistic solution to an ugly problem.
Anirudh Sharma isn't an artist, but he and his team have come up with a creative way to tackle air pollution.
What we are saying is that while the pollution is being released in the environment, why don't you capture it? And once you capture it, make use of that pollution rather than throwing it into a waste stream.
Sharma and his colleagues at Gravity Labs are taking pollutants from diesel engine and chimney emissions and turning them into ink.
We have a plasma-based emission control technology that fits onto the exhaust of the tailpipes of the generators and chimneys. And without affecting the performance of the engine or the chimney, it captures all the pollution that would have otherwise gone into the environment.
Air ink is made of black carbon that has been purified and turned into a pigment base for inks and paints. About 50 minutes of diesel car pollution goes into markers like these. The product takes its cues from history, when the first inks were made from the black soot of oil lamps.
There were mosques that were painted in Turkey by an architect called Sinai, who used to take the lamp black from the lamp that was burned in the night and write poetry and calligraphy on the walls.
Air ink isn't available for purchase, but through artist partnerships, the startup is taking over public spaces with its own message of environmental awareness.
It's more of a activism tool. It's more of a branding tool. So people believe in it. It gets people started to talk about pollution.
It's an issue that won't be solved overnight. But in places like India, where Sharma is from, it's an attempt to work with a pollutant that's seemingly everywhere.
When you go back to India, you see it in your face. And for us, it did a big thing that, well, how do we utilize this problem as a solution itself? Air pollution knows no borders. It's a problem everywhere. We're trying to bring the technology everywhere it's required right now.
Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find our program all over the internet. You can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud, streaming each day on VOA Asia Facebook, and of course at our website, voanews.com. You can also find us on the radio. Try tuning in to Chiang Mai University, Radio FM 100 at Chiang Mai University in Thailand if you happen to be in that area. We thank everyone there who tuned in today. As we always thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zainab Abdel-Rahman, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day.